Blog Talk Radio.
Comics Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd. This is Andre Batts, your guest host. Tonight we will be missing my co-host, Miss Cynthia McDonald. She's off, you know, a little under the weather right now. Tonight we're going to be interviewing Mr. Keith Young. Keith Young is the author of several different lectures that he's done. One in particular that we're really concerned about is the African origins of superheroes, modern-day superheroes, as well as the superheroes that came into existence long before a lot of us were reading comic books, such as your Superman, Batman, such as, you know, the X-Men. We want to get into a little bit of that. We want to get into the recolorization of the different characters that have came out in the mainstream lately in the movie industry, such as Nick Fury. We want to talk a little bit about Miles Morales, hopefully. But needless to say, I'm very proud and very glad to have this brother on board tonight. Mr. Keith Young, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you loud and clear, brother. How are you today?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. I'm glad you were able to come on the show tonight. I've been wanting to get you on here for a minute, but we've been shut down for a little while. Now we're back in order again. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it's an honor to be here. Thanks for inviting.
Oh, great. Well, as you know, you're going to be a part of the Motor City Black Age of Comics, which is coming up very soon. As a matter of fact, next Saturday, and I'm glad to have you on board with that to do your lecture on the African origins of superheroes. I'm very glad that you're going to be on board with that.
All right. Yeah, that's one of my favorite lectures. So, yeah, I'm glad I get to be a part as well. You know, I've done that lecture at your comic conventions for several years. And, you know, I think it's an important part of the conversation about comic books and media and movies that we need to be cognizant of where these ideas came from. It's very important, you know, so we can have accurate portrayals of our people and our various cultures, you know, in the media as opposed to the more stereotypical ones that you know, we've been subjected to over the past several decades.
Okay, okay. So what made you decide to go this route as far as what made you get into, I guess, researching that as far as, you know, the African origins of superheroes? What really made you research that?
My research that wasn't where I was trying to go, honestly. It's actually a byproduct of simply studying the history of various cultures and people inside of Africa or in throughout the diaspora, really. And as I learned more about their myths and their cosmogony of gods and goddesses, the stories sounded very familiar. I was an avid comic book reader. I've read Marvel and DC. I was very familiar with a lot of the characters. Not all of them. You know, there's so many characters. I don't know anybody that knows them all. But, you know, I'm very familiar with comics and, you know, their premise and, you know, the different origin stories and things like that. And as I was reading through the history of our people, the people of Kemet, the people of the Dogon, the people of Yoruba, it was like, wow, these sound like just like comic book stories. And come to find out, I actually had done some research. I wanted to be a comic book illustrator. I'm a fairly decent illustrator. And one of the things that I learned about the art of comic books is that where the authors and the illustrators go for inspiration when it comes to comic book stories, the first place they go is to mythology. Greek mythology, Roman mythology, they kind of took those myths of the heroes and gods and goddesses and remixed them and turned them into what we call superheroes.
Right.
But they got the ideas about the archetypes and the double identity and the secret identity and all that stuff, being able to transform one thing, transforming into another. As hard as it was to believe, because of the history that I learned about our people, was that we were backwards and primitive and savage, and we didn't really contribute anything to civilization. And
right.
As I studied history from our perspective and from the perspective of African and indigenous people around the world, come to find out they were the originators of all the facets of culture and civilization that we know today, or we were taught was, you know, came from the Greek fathers of this and that. What they failed to mention is that those Greek fathers very often went to Africa to learn the things that they then took back to their people. So including those stories, including the myths of our gods and our goddesses and our spirit beings who had these fantastical powers and did these fantastical deeds, that became like the blueprint for an epic story, a blueprint for, you know, how the hero progresses through life. Those are African indigenous stories turned into comic books. And when I saw the correspondence, it was like, oh, my God, okay, wow. All the things I knew and loved, it became clear why I loved comic books so much, why I love certain superheroes so much. Because that's actually a part of who I am. My genetic memory was telling me, hey, there's something to that.
Correct.
So that's how I got into it. I kind of stumbled into it, actually.
Okay, well, you know, it's great that you stumbled into that, because nowadays we have a large amount of individuals, you know, of African descent that are doing comics. You know, a lot of us are doing comics, but not all of us have, say, intertwined that philosophy into our characters. You know, me, myself, just like you, you know, I've studied on, you know, a lot of things as it relates to the African diaspora, and I studied Kemet, the Moors, I've studied Dogon and so forth, and I like to add that into my brand as well, you know, with urban style comics. I have dreadlocks, Jihad AD, and Black Watch, and I intertwine a lot of our mythos inside of my characters as well. So I know exactly what you're saying. It needs to be done. And this has been needing to be the case for a long time.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think still we're still gravitating too much into, you know, what Marvel and DC has to offer, which is basically the same thing they've been offering from day one, you know, when we first started reading comics. But I want to ask you a question. How do you feel about them coloring or changing the ethnicities of the different characters in these Marvel movies, such as, you know, Nick Fury, so on and so forth?
I mean, they've always taken artistic license. I feel like a lot of the recoloring comes from a couple places. They, you know, for one, they get to say we're showing more cultural diversity and, you know, appealing to a broader audience, which is a good thing. However, you know, it's only recently that, you know, African Americans and other indigenous people in America have become what's known as a target market for them. They, you know, in the past, you know, in the past, they weren't looking at us as moviegoers. They didn't care what we wanted to see, and they wanted to actually program what we thought was beautiful and strong and super. And that didn't include us in their mind, so they just ignored us completely. But since, you know, the inception of certain movies that were largely supported by the indigenous people of America and in the world, movies like The Matrix, you know, it was, you know, we kind of gravitated towards that movie and made it more than what it was. Blade, a lot, you know, a lot of the Marvel community does not pay enough respect to the fact that it was Wesley Snipes and Blade that opened the door for superhero movies again. Because, you know, before Blade, superhero movies was corny. They were terrible.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
So he brought that realness to it, which, once again, you have a indigenous man, and, you know, the people that supported the movie look like us. So now, because we're more of a market, it's like, okay, well, let's regurgitate it, recolor it, and sell it to them. So it's a gift and a curse. It's good and bad. You know, I don't mind it. Some of the characters, I think they're kind of trying to force into another culture, but and it can be problematic. Like, you know, I didn't like the casting for Ghost in the Shell. I'm a big Ghost in the Shell fan, and the major character in that show, she's an Asian woman,
right?
And in the movie, she was cast as a white woman,
right?
Which I thought was kind of problematic. But then on the other end of that, The Dark Tower, which just came out, I'm a big fan of that book series by Stephen King, The Dark Tower, which is also, Marvel has several comics of it. That's a white character who had been recast by Idris Elba as being, you know, so that sword kind of cuts both ways. You know, there's some of us, you know, some white people get upset when they see their characters turn black. And then we, vice versa, you know, we still have this racial identity issue that we need to have conversations about.
That's true. I was reading something earlier today on fake book news. I don't call it, because that's what it is, fake news. And it was something on one of the links, Black Heroes, about the Green Lantern, you know, the Hal Jordan versus John Stewart. And I'm going to read this quote to you real quick. It says that creator Neil Adams made the character black because, given the racial makeup of the world's population, we ought to have a black Green Lantern, not because we're liberals, but because it just makes sense. Do you feel that we're actually starting to outpopulate the so-called majority race?
Yeah, absolutely. We've always outpopulated them. That's the issue for us. Hasn't been outpopulation. It's been marginalization. They've been able to take control of the parts of culture and society that matter. When I say that, they have control of heat, gas, light, electricity, you know, foodstuffs, clothing, shelter, and so because they get to control that, it's kind of like having a huge lever for them. They have more of the lever on their end, so they get to utilize the resources that they've stolen, appropriated, killed for, et cetera. They get to utilize that, and we have to pay them for that. We have to go, you know, kind of begging to the corporation or begging to the state or begging to the federal government for all the things that we need for life. So
correct.
That means they get to control the images and the perception of majority. Minority never meant for black people that there were fewer of us here.
Right.
Minority is a legal term, which means that you're incapable. That means that you're it's like a minor child. That, you know, your minor child can't enter into certain contractual agreements. They're not considered legal. They have to have a legal guardian. So that legal guardian in America is called the majority. And we're known as minorities, not because there's fewer of us, but because that's a class of people that they relegate.
I like the way you put that. It's almost like saying that you have the inferior race of people versus the superior race of people. That's why, you know, it seems like they're, you know, just in control of everything, because it's like Papa and the Son. You know, we're the sons and they're the Papa, but all actuality, you know, we know Papa was here long before the sons came into existence, if you get my drift on that. Yeah. So, but now, you know, for some reason, they have stripped the motherland so much, and they're still stripping the motherland of all its resources to create everything that's out here and everything that they're doing. Whatever it is that they're creating, as far as machinery is concerned, machinery that can fly, machinery that can go into space, you know, different flights, different machinery that can go across the seas. We know that a lot of resources from the motherland is what's imbued into these different machineries. But
that's right.
One day I think we'll wake up to the fact that this is what's going on. But dealing in what we're dealing with is comics or whatever. And me, myself, personally, when they create characters of color, I think they need to do them from scratch as opposed to, you know, changing the colors of the characters that exist today. The reason why I feel that way is because it has shown me that you actually are, you know, really serious about the dynamics in this country.
Yeah.
You know, not that you're going to impress me or not impress me. That's not even important, but it's important for people to see that, as opposed to, say, them, you know, making a Captain America black, or, you know, like I said, I'm stuck on Nick Fury, you know, making Nick Fury black. And like you brought up earlier, you know, with the Dark Tower, you know, even with that, you know, those type of things to me personally are cool, but it's a bigger picture than that. Create something from scratch that's just as viable as that.
Well, you know, I agree with you 100%. But, you know, Hollywood's issue has always been that it's a place that likes to pump out bona fide hits. You know, they work with things that they quote-unquote know are going to work. So Hollywood is very formulaic, and it's very, very repetitive, and it's very seldom that you see something truly new come through Hollywood. You might see something new at Sundance or, you know, these indie sites or, you know, independent creators. That's where you're going to get the truly new concepts and ideas. But Marvel, Disney, you know, they're not going to create too much new, because they're actually – the movies that we're seeing now are based on comic books that I used to read in the 80s
coming
and
up.
That were in existence
right.
since the 50s. So, you know, they're just regurgitating very old ideas, very old. That Doctor Strange, as great as it looked, that I mean,
right.
their imagination, a lot of those artists were way ahead of their time. And what they also don't tell you is not only did they study mythology, but they were also doing indigenous shamanistic practices like eating mushrooms, you know, smoking cannabis and peyote and all kinds of things like that, going on these spirit trips, and then coming back from the astral plane talking about, you know, Doctor Strange and Mordo and all that stuff is their you know, way of kind of trying to tap into that area of creativity that's where we live. That's where our spirituality springs from as people.
Right.
So you're very right. I think anything that's new, truly new, is going to come from an independent source, such as yourself, myself, you know, all these people out here who are waking up to our history and power. That I think that's where
Correct.
The truly new ideas are going to come from.
Correct. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought about actually creating a comic or just novels?
Oh, yeah. No, I have several comic ideas that I got, you know, kind of collecting dust. I've been I'm actually writing a book right now called Black Goddess, Legacy of the Sacred Black Feminine, which I'm illustrating as well. It's not a comic book, but it has several dozen illustrations by me to illustrate the points and the various goddesses that I'm talking about in the book. I do have some ideas I've been working on that, you know, there'll be future projects coming up with some of my comic book ideas.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So that's great to hear, you know, because we need more of that, you know, more of that type of information out here, you know, rather than science fiction. I know you get into science fiction as well, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, we need that, you know, more in the sci-fi world, the comic world, you know, just the whole nerd world, period. We need that. So they'll know that we actually exist. Have you been keeping up with
the...
They
know it. We just don't know it. We're still we ostracize ourselves. You know, we kind of stratify around lines of normal and abnormal, you know, so there's a lot of children who are nerdy into Yumacon and doing the cosplay dress up, but you know their peers still, you know, bully them about being a nerd or acting white or who you think you are, and you know, so there's a lot of people who are trying to, you know, break through into... that's where we need to go, into the future. That's always been the problem with science fiction, especially as written by our white counterparts, because for the most part, we're absent in a lot of science fiction movies. Like Richard Pryor says, it's almost like you don't expect me to be in the future. So that's why Afrofuturism is so important, that we are looking at, well, what would science look like for black people in the future? What would superpowers look like for us in the future as we wake up and, you know, all these things are coming back online? As far as our chakras and, you know, the entities that are indigenous to our people calling to us and our ancestors, you know, activating things within us, as that occurs, what does that look like, though, for us? You know, are we creating a dystopian future where it's, you know, like something under the Thunderdome, or are we creating a future that's more communal and filled with art and science and music and love? What does the future look like for black people is up to us to define and to then tell those stories. So it's crucial. It's very crucial that we get into science fiction and fantasy and tell the story from our perspective so that it's not filled with stereotypes and rituals designed to keep us locked down.
Yes, that is true. I agree. Let me ask you another question. Who were your earlier inspirations or who are your present influences as of today that inspired you as far as the work that you're doing?
Oh, there's so many of them. One of the main ones was brother named Dr. Charles Finch and J.A. Rogers.
Okay.
Dr. J. Charles
Rogers.
Finch, he is a medical doctor, but he's also an African spiritualist. And he was giving a lecture on history and the accomplishments of ancient African people around the world. And it was full of information I had never heard of. And it really changed my outlook on life. And his explanation for sharing history, he says, I'm a medical doctor. Well, you might be wondering why I'm sharing this history with you. And he said that, I'm sharing history with you because as a medical doctor, before I can diagnose a person with a medical issue, I have to take a history. I have to understand where they came from, where they've been, what things they're susceptible to, what goes into their genetic makeup before I can make a proper diagnosis. He says if our people are sick from a lack of knowledge and that we are ignorant of who we are as a people, the first thing we have to do in order to heal that is take a history. And that really changed my whole outlook on, you know, how do we help our people to become more aware of who we are and then take control of the power that we do have. That has to come from history first so that we can get a firm foundation on where we are in the world, where we are in time and space, and where we have yet to go. And J.A. Rogers was a publisher and a writer and author who published a lot of great works about history and how our people were a worldwide people. It wasn't just an African indigenous presence, but he actually wrote a lot about that history, and he had a lot of illustrations in his books, you know, that he, I'm certain he had them done or he did them himself, but he was really trying to show people what he was writing about. So that's an important concept for me, to have lots of graphic heavy documentation so that not only is it factual information that you can go and check and refer to, but that you also have an image that can unlock things within your unconscious mind as you look at them to change the way that you think about who you are and your place in the world.
That is true. I appreciate J.A. Rogers' writings, you know, Sex and Race. And I first got introduced to him when I read 100 Amazing Facts About the Negro. When I read that, which was, you know, like basically a pamphlet, but everything, all the facts that it pointed out, just, you know, I was just amazed by it when I first read it. And I was like, man, I have to really study up on this and take it to a whole nother level. You know, and I was really impressed.
Yeah.
This was like in 1990, I think, when I read it. Check this out, Keith. How about you let everybody know, you know, what your plans are for the future and how can they go about meeting you or getting some of your information? Because, you know, we only got like a minute and a half.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'm writing a book. I'm trying to get it pushed out by January. It's called Black Goddess, Legacy of the Sacred Black Feminine. It's a type of a coffee table book, but it will be full of history, mythology, and legends and stories about black goddesses and their ties to black women and why that's important. As you said, next week I'm going to be presenting at the Motor City Age of Black Comics, so they can see me there. They can also reach me at my website, which is Afro Perspectives, AfroPerspectives.com. There's information about the presentations that I give and my most current projects that I'm working on. If you're interested in the book that I'm currently working on, you can check out the website at sacredblackgoddess.com.
Cool.
Next week not only will I be doing the presentation, but I'm going to stick around to field questions and just enjoy the con myself. So I'm really looking forward to being there, and I would like to take this time to thank you for allowing me to be a part of the conference and a part of your show this week.
Great. And I want to thank you for being a part of it, Keith. And I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd. Until next time, peace.
Peace.